Very good day to you all. Welcome back to the 20-minute hit, the fast-paced all-sport talking podcast that brings you the major news from the last 7 days in the world of sport. I'm Ollie Wilson, sports broadcaster and journalist for TalkSport, BT Sport and various outlets around the globe. And joining me, as always, the brains behind the show, my very good friend, Mr. Paul McDonald here. Paul, congratulations first and foremost. And in a very busy week of sport, you've been very busy in general, I presume.
Yes, future Premier League star Alexander McDonald was born last week, so
Scottish
I'm counting down
League.
The days until he signs his first professional contract.
And you've got to be quite happy as well. Scottish football's finally got its face back, if you will. The Rangers getting promoted, and we're going to have the Old Firm derby once again back in the Scottish Premier League, and it's going to have some importance as well.
Yeah, let's take a wide berth from that conversation. I don't want to get involved in that, to be honest.
We'll come back to that at a later date then. We are also joined by a freelance sports journalist, a Spanish football expert and senior sub-editor for English version of Marca. It is, of course, my very good friend, UEFA-accredited journalist, Mr. Jason Pettigrove, joining us here on the show. Jason, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm very, very well, Ollie. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
You must be happy I didn't say Pettiford like I seem to do the last few times that we've spoken. I finally got your name right, and I will apologise. Earlier in the week, I called Gerard Piqué Nelson Piqué in a commentary, and it was just I just had it in my brain for about 20 minutes. It was terrible. But we'll come on to Barcelona in just a moment. We're going to kick things off on the show with the breaking news from last week in the Sunday Times about allegations of doping in the Premier League. Now, we've spoken a lot about doping. There's been plenty of talk about it in tennis and athletics, of course, over the last 6 months. I'll start with you, Paul, because we've been umming and ahhing about this before on the show. Is there any surprise really at all that now we're starting to hear rumours, myths and allegation that there is doping in the Premier League in the UK?
Yeah, I feel as if the net is closing slightly here. I feel like the reluctance from the Premier League to get involved in conversations regarding this, it can't be ignored for much longer. But what the sport really needs, and what I read a good piece this week from Peter Staunton on Goal, who referenced the fact that football desperately needs its whistleblower. It needs somebody to go on record and say that these players have came to me categorically for doping purposes. Until we get to that point, then we're still in this area of conjecture. Now, fair play to the Sunday Times, obviously they took a hit when Lance Armstrong sued them previously, and ultimately they were vindicated in that case. Fair play to them for taking this case on here, but ultimately you're left slightly unsatisfied by the lack of information. You've got clubs mentioned, but not any specific doping techniques, no doctors or no players involved. And it becomes very easy for Chelsea and Arsenal and other clubs involved to just issue outright a statement denying everything involved. And until we've actually got some hard proof, then you might see the cards beginning to fall. But I feel as if we might be a bit closer to that time than ever before.
Jason, we've seen doping occur in Italian sports before. Fabio Cannavaro was involved when he was at Parma back in the day in Italian football. There's myth and rumour all the time about it in various other sports. It's not been too long and too far away from the fact that we are getting it now, allegations of it in the UK. What do you think about the reaction that Arsenal, Chelsea and Leicester bringing out those kind of blanket statements, say no, there's no doping at our clubs or anything like that? Is that just a knee-jerk reaction, quickly just wiping the slate clean and just trying to move and basically sweep this one under the rug, do you think?
Yeah, I'm not even sure if it's a knee-jerk reaction. It's just, as Paul said, it's a very sweeping statement. It's very convenient for them to just say, no, nothing to do with us, Governor. Because, you know, as we've seen with what's come out in the Sunday Times, they've got some grainy sort of video footage. And, you know, when you sort of dig a little bit deeper, there isn't really any meat on the bone. So I think actually for the clubs involved, it might well come back to bite them on the backside, because I don't think there's something in this. There's got to be something in this. I'm a big believer of with the doping scandals in sport generally. Football is, of course, it's always was always going to happen in the Premier League. It's just a question of when and how it was going to come out. I think, again, you know, this potentially is the tip of the iceberg. It perhaps could have come out with a bit more meat on the bones, as I've said. But yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a few clubs that are going to be looking over their shoulder for sure.
Is the Premier League and our Premier League clubs, considering the amount of money and how big the organisation is, the global TV money that's coming in, the TV deals here in the UK that comes in, are they just too big to have these allegations come near them now? Has the Premier League almost become untouchable in that sense, that whether there's any truth in these or not, and these are still unconfirmed allegations, they're going to be able to deal with this if there is any truth in it, and stop it from affecting business, so to speak?
Lance Armstrong got away with it for a long time. It was untouchable, Ollie, but ultimately they caught him in the end. I think in the case here, what you've got is a situation where the amount of tests that are being carried out of competition on these players are so low that the chances of catching somebody in the act is very remote. And if we want to take this seriously, we need to look at the amount of revenue that the Premier League has generated. It's going to be $5.1 billion across this new TV deal. WADA is only funded to the tune of $26 million a year to fund the entire sporting spectrum. It simply isn't enough. And if we want to take our sport seriously and value our sporting competitions as being clean, then we need to put our hands in our pockets at the top level of the game to make sure that WADA is properly funded.
It'd be interesting to see if anything comes from the allegations of the article that was released in the Sunday Times last week, and we will keep an eye on that, as we do with all of those sorts of allegations here on the 20-minute hit as they go through and sweep through the sporting world. Let's get back down to sporting competition, though, gentlemen, and let's start with what happened last weekend in El Clasico, Barcelona against Real Madrid. It was seemingly going to be the game for Barcelona, just continue that record-breaking winning streak in all competitions, up to 39 games going into El Clasico, and suddenly Real Madrid come back, bite them in the behind after Piqué gives Barca the lead, and they end up falling at the Camp Nou 2-1 to Real Madrid. Jason, start with you. I know you're obviously a big Barcelona fan and a big Spanish football fan as well, but let's talk about this. Well, Barca just didn't seem to be good enough on that Saturday night to beat Real Madrid, who took the game to Barca and showed really no fear at points.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing for me was having Casemiro at the heart of the centre midfield for Real. If we look back to the Clásico earlier in the season, Rafa Benitez, we all believe, was told that he had to come out of that game. I think he played for 6 or 7 games before that Clásico. And because it was, you know, the Bernabeu, out came Casemiro, in went James Rodriguez, and look what happened. It was 4-0. So, number one, Casemiro being in there and restricting Messi in particular to doing what he normally does to every other team was, you know, a huge thumbs up on Zinedine Zidane's part. And I think Luis Enrique also got it wrong. He was playing Messi through the middle, whereas, you know, as anyone that's followed Spanish football this season knows that Messi's at his most dangerous coming in off the right-hand side. So there wasn't enough room for him in the middle. Suarez was getting in his way from time to time. Neymar was off the boil. And I think as well, quite a lot of the time what's happening now, it always seems to be about what are MSN going to do? Forgetting the fact, you know, the opposition that they be playing against might be as good as them, as was shown at the weekend. You know, if MSN have an off day, the others in the team have got to step up. And they didn't really do that. Once Piqué gave them the lead, that should have been their game to go on and win. And obviously they didn't do that.
It was. It must have been heartbreaking as well for Barca fans to have it being Ronaldo scoring that late winner. And after Madrid down to 10 men, Sergio Ramos getting his side in trouble. He did it again in midweek this week with a few lunging challenges in the Champions League, which is no surprise. Sergio Ramos now, I think he's been sent off in 3-4 El Clasicos at least, and just doesn't have the ability to keep his cool head. Considering his age and experience, he's actually a real liability for this Real Madrid defence at the moment.
Yeah, he is, but I mean, I just found the game itself very bizarre. I thought it was a strange match. I felt as if Barcelona almost felt as if that the match didn't mean that much to them because they knew they had Atletico coming on Tuesday night, to the extent where they thought to themselves that even if we lose this match, we're probably still going to go on and win the league anyway. And I don't think anybody would suggest that Barca are going to be caught at the top of the league. I think their lead is too great. But Jason touched on a good point. I think that Messi, Neymar and Suarez, that triumvirate has worked so well for the past 18 months that it just seems to be running out of steam slightly at the moment. I think, I don't know whether teams are beginning to realise that if you sit very, very deep, as Atletico did on Tuesday as well, and we'll get to that in a second, and restrict the space in the middle of the pitch, then you are isolating those three to produce moments of magic. And again, as Jason touched on, Rakitic and Iniesta didn't really step up to the plate in terms of being creative enough to give those guys the chances to score.
Can I just cut across you as well? I think it's also worth pointing out that was one game where actually Ronaldo got back and defended, which we don't often say that about him. He was excellent, and you know all of Real were excellent as well. I think Zidane had his tactics spot on you know, it's a slow game, which perhaps Barca didn't expect at the beginning, and then they sort of banged him on the break in the latter stages. So again, big thumbs up to Real Madrid and Zidane. Tactics absolutely spot on.
Perhaps didn't get it spot on though this week. We'll move on to the Champions League now, gents, and combine this all as one, because Barca is the on-running theme as we go into Tuesday night's game then from this week against Atletico Madrid. Diego Simeone sitting everybody back behind the ball and keeping everybody almost crowded inside the penalty area to try and hold off and stop that Barca attack from breaking through, forcing balls to come in from the flanks and then trying to hit on the counter-attack. Obviously, Torres gives them the lead, then gets sent off 10 minutes later, and Barca are battering down the doors. Jason, though, you said before we came on air that you were a little disappointed still, despite the 2-1 victory for Barca coming back from behind. What went wrong then for Barca on Tuesday night? Because you've got a 2-1, they've got a 2-1 lead going into the Vicente Calderon next week in the second leg, but you're not happy with that.
And not so much I'm not happy with it. I just don't think it's a big enough lead for them to be happy with, because we all know that if Atleti get an early goal at the Calderon, they're more than capable of sitting on that lead and basically going through. I think with the amount of pressure that Barcelona had in the second half, they probably should have come away with at least a third, maybe even a fourth goal. Having said that, in the first half, they were abysmal. Or was it a case of Atleti, again, having their tactics spot on? And unfortunately, you know, Torres getting sent off, and despite what everyone seems to say about UEFA loan and stuff like that, you know, that's not the narrative I like to go with. That was a clear sending off. and unfortunately, that did come back to hurt Atleti. But I sort of go back to a point that Paul just made about the Clásico, and I think there's a lot of lethargy and tiredness coming now from Barcelona. They've played an awful lot of games since the turn of the year, and I think now we're coming to sort of the business end, and for the most part, Enrique isn't rotating. You know, those players are tired. They're going to be playing also in sort of the Copa America, some of them, so they won't have a rest again in the summer. So, you know, I think it's set up nicely for next week. If Barca can get the early goal, then Atleti have to come out and play, and I think Barca then can take the game. But, you know, we all know how tough an opponent Atleti can be.
Very tough defensively, and they showed that, Paul, on Tuesday. As I say, they really smothered that Barca attack at times, and it forced Alves and Alba to start putting in balls from the flanks, which isn't exactly tailored, I think, to Barca's game. Credit to Simeone, I take it, for the way he set out on Tuesday, and also then just massive discredit to Fernando Torres for two of the most foolish challenges that you'll see, to get two yellow cards and put his team down to 10 men after 35 minutes.
Yeah, I think it was pretty clear that Simeone was trying to push Barcelona out wide to the flanks, because Messi had again picked up a more central role. I wouldn't pick two other players in world football probably at the moment other than Koke and Gabi to be my defensive shield. I think the two of them are fantastic players and they did a great job even after Torres' ludicrous sending off. And I completely concur with Jason, this UEFA loan nonsense. Torres should have been booked before that for a late tackle. I think it was on Iniesta when he was trying to clear it before that. And the two incidences where he did pick up bookings were stupid challenges. He was too hyped up for the occasion. He was too motivated to go into tackles where he didn't need to be there. He knows the reputation that Busquets in particular has got. And to follow through on the halfway line when the ball was nowhere near a dangerous position was just stupid. So,
what about the Suarez two challenges as well, though? The palm to the face of Philippe Luis and the kick out at Juan Fran just before the break as well. Because some people are saying that one on Juan Fran, that could have been a straight red for the way Suarez lashed out. And it was lucky he apologised straight away for it. But he had that almost that moment of red once again.
Yeah, I've seen players be sent off for that before, absolutely. But it was a strange performance from Suarez as well, because he was frustrated for about 65 minutes, and then that 15-minute burst after he scored, he was absolutely sensational. Second goal was great. I think he could teach Neymar a thing or two about heading a ball, considering the two glaring headed chances that Neymar missed. And again, as Jason said, even though Atletico defended so well up until a point, look at the chances that Neymar missed. Look at the he hit the crossbar as well, curled one wide of the post. Suarez missed one, Messi missed one. This game could be out of sight already. And I just think with that lead, no matter how slender it is, I think because the game has to open up and Athletic have to come out and score, I think Barca, if MSN play to anywhere near their ability, will pick them off in the counter-attack.
Be interesting to see what happens in the Vicente Calderon in the return leg of that quarterfinal. There were plenty of other Champions League quarterfinals to get our teeth into. Of course, Real Madrid, the shock loss in Germany to Wolfsburg. And you mentioned, Jason, that Zidane got it tactically perfect at the Camp Nou in El Clasico. Did he get it tactically completely wrong on Wednesday night against Wolfsburg?
Not completely wrong, but the one major, major mistake he made was dropping Danny Carvajal and bringing in Danilo. I mean, I think I saw a stat somewhere that he basically was a big fat zero against anything. You know, no passes completed or anything like that. I think maybe, you know, they sort of cock a hoop after El Clasico and have gone into that game thinking, well, Wolfsburg are the, you know, the worst side left. Or sorry, not the worst side left in the competition, but the outsiders of the competition. And then you think, actually, well, they've got players like Draxler and Schürrle playing for them. I mean, you know, they're a decent team. I think, you know, 2-0 probably would have been beyond their wildest dreams, if we're honest. But, you know, that's, if you don't go into the game believing that you're going to win it, which I don't think Real Madrid could possibly have done, then, you know, you get punished.
They've got a Champions League experience as well at the back in the likes of Dante. It's a Wolfsburg side that certainly has the capability to cause surprises. Paul, you said that Man City weren't going to cause any surprises at all and would get steamrolled by PSG the other week. Wasn't the case, though, last night. That 2-2 draw was sometimes beautiful football and sometimes absolutely horrendous from both sides at points.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Much obliged, mate.
No worries, mate.
No, again, it's a match of missed chances. I mean, if you look at the first 20 minutes, if you want that penalty and that clean through a chance to fall with anyone in the pitch, you want Zlatan to be on the end of it. And he fluffed his lines twice. I think that game is still very much there for the taking. I've watched City a lot at home this season, and many, many teams have picked them off. Liverpool looked at one of the best teams in Europe against them. West Ham beat them comfortably. Leicester beat them easily. Spurs won there. Man United won there. I don't think PSG have got anything to fear. The only thing that counts against them is the fact that you might say that they haven't had any competition domestically all season, but even now that the league has won, will they take their eye off the ball and not require that motivation in order to keep going and keep challenging every game? I mean, we've seen it with Bayern Munich over the past few seasons when they've swept up the league by the end of March. When the Champions League comes around, they aren't quite clicking in the same gear. So, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see if the same thing happens to PSG.
Last one before we move on to the 2020 World Cup final. Benfica, have they got a chance? 1-0 down against Bayern Munich. Very briefly, gents, on this.
They've always got a chance. I think, 1-0, I think it was the second minute from Bayern Munich, you would have thought they'd have gone on and absolutely smashed that one. But no, I mean, there's always a chance.
Always a chance, but against Bayern, you just imagine that they're going to get it right in that second leg. They were underwhelming at times against Benfica on Tuesday night. And finally, gents, let's leave it with that incredible finale to the T20 World Cup. England needing 19, West Indies, excuse me, needing 19 off the last over. And Ben Stokes getting hit for 6 4 times by Braithwaite off the first 4 balls. I was huddled around a monitor down at the studios watching it with a few people, and we couldn't believe what we were seeing. One of the most thrilling finales that you'll see to any sporting competition, surely, that one.
I can sit here smugly as a Scotsman and say it seemed like such an English way to lose the match, you know what I mean? It was like they put themselves in pole position with some excellent bowling, considering they didn't necessarily rack up a particularly high score in their own 20 overs, and yet we're still in a really good position to see the match out. And I'm torn in between feeling sorry for Stokes and also suggesting that, listen, he got it completely wrong. He was put in the position where he had to see the match out, and he failed miserably. Not quite worth the abuse that he's been receiving on New Zealand radio over the past few days, so I've heard. I think his mother had to phone up and defend him. But yeah, I think he knows as well as anybody that in that situation, he got it so wrong. And hey, but listen, it made for incredible television, and then it's really invigorated the T20 and made people realise what an exciting version of the sport it actually is.
It may have changed the viewpoint of some of the purists. In terms of Stokes, though, after 2 balls going for 6, he looked like a broken man already. It's almost like he'd lost everything, in his confidence and his momentum. And there was no way that the West Indies, after those first 2 sixes, it seemed, Jason, weren't going to lose this in the final over.
I know, but it's incredible, isn't it? If you think of all the people that could sort of choke in a game like that, you'd never have Stokes down as the man to do that. But no, I mean, as you say, after 2 balls, it was like a rabbit in the headlights kind of situation. And completely off the hook, West Indies. I think Braithwaite, I think I read somewhere, in his last four innings against England, had only scored 25 runs in the whole four innings. And then obviously he scored, you know, 24 in four balls. But you have to feel for Stokes. But I've got to agree as well with Paul, you know, he got it completely wrong. And, you know, he paid for it, unfortunately.
West Indies, then, the dominant force in T20 cricket, picking up the Women's and Men's World Cup trophies last week. And that's all the time we've got here on the 20-minute hit. Gentlemen, thanks once again for joining us. Jason, really appreciate you taking the time out to come and join us here today. And an ideal time to chat to you after El Clasico and the Spanish action from the Champions League. And, of course, Paul, big thanks as always, mate. And I'll catch up with you next week indeed.
Thanks, Jason, mate.
Cheers, guys. We will be back next week. Remember to follow us on @20MinuteHit on Twitter. Get onto iTunes and follow the podcast as well. Remember to give us a review, give us a shout out, your comments, what you want us to talk about next week. We'll be back in 7 days' time. Have a good one.